All right. If Elfrid Payton had a quote-unquote normal haircut, would we even care about him as a prospect?
You know the story behind that, right? Well, great point, by the way.
Like, I feel like his hair is giving him much more potential than his actual basketball game. So I think the hair has gotta change.
It's gotta stay.
Good to start. Zach Harper, my guest today, is good to start. So we're going to start this episode of Almighty Ballin', the Almighty Podcast. Zach, thanks for jumping on. You know, we've already discussed the lustrous career and great exploits of the podcaster Zach Harper. So you got to do it again just for the listeners, though.
Yeah, I'm unemployed. That's basically a lustrous career. I used to work for ESPN. I used to work for ESPN, then I worked for CBS, now I don't work for anybody.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, you know who he is. And Zach, I really appreciate you sitting down with me today, because I don't think that there's any combination of two people who could sit down on a podcast, maybe two podcasts, and solve every single NBA team except for me and you.
I feel like we have the answers, right? Like, it. How hard could it be to solve a team of, you know, contracts and guaranteed money and personalities and a lack of talent or too much talent or whatever?
You talk about owners being light years ahead. Bloggers, we were on the internet before the internet was cool. So, I mean.
Right, exactly. Like, I mean, I can't tell you how many championships I've won in NBA 2K over the years. So, like, I just feel like it's easy.
Well, yeah, that's a good start. And, hey, so I actually don't really know this. Are you from Minnesota, or are you just a Timberwolves fan?
No, I'm just an idiot. I'm from California. God. I'm from California. Grew up in Sacramento. Lived there most of my life. I've lived all over. I lived in Mississippi for a year. I lived in San Diego. I lived in Minneapolis for like three or four years. Lived in Miami. Live in Salt Lake City. I'm just doing laps around the country.
Well, yeah, I mean, some of those places have teams that we're going to touch on, but I was going to start with the Timberwolves because I know that you have a certain allegiance to them. I'm upset that we have to talk about this as a team that we need to address as something that needs fixing.
It's insane to me. I love him. He's my guy, but I blame Tim Bontemps. I really do. Like, Tim Bontemps came out and said, like, this team's going to win 50 games. They're going to make the playoffs. And their average starting lineup right now, because Rubio's out with an elbow sprain, is 22 years old. The other team that has an average starting lineup of 22 years old, the Phoenix Suns. Why aren't we saying they're going to make the playoffs? Like, this team's good, and they will be better, and they will figure it all out. But man, they're young, and it's 7 games in. Like, we got to calm down.
Zach, but here's the issue. All right, that 62 win Bulls team, the first year that Thibodeau was on staff. All right, sophomore point guard. So, you know, Derrick Rose, right, was, I mean, fresh out of college. Like, he was literally in the league 1 year before Tom Thibodeau turned him into the starting point guard on a 62-win team. Joakim Noah only played 50 games that season. Carlos Boozer was sopping up a ton of minutes. And so Thibodeau coached a defense that had Carlos Boozer playing significant minutes at the center, too, sometimes, or alongside Taj Gibson. And they were kind of by far the best defense in the league. Like,
yeah,
there's no reason why the Timberwolves aren't doing this.
There's plenty of reason. One, they weren't a 41-win team last year, like the Bulls were that he took over, and that team was 11th in defense. The Wolves were like 27th in defense last. Like, this team just is young, and they don't know what the hell they're doing. And so that's the thing, like, everyone fails to realize. It's like, yeah, Carlos Boozer was a bad defender. He was a communicator. And you put him next to Joakim Noah, and those are two really communicative guys on defense.
Oh, God.
and, like, those are guys that just talk all the time. Towns talks a lot. Gorgui Dieng, not so much. And Gorgui Dieng has been pretty bad defensively to start every single season of his career so far. He figures it out, and he gets better. But, like, this team just isn't even close to what that Bulls team was. And the Bulls team was in the East, and the East sucks. So, and it always sucks, and it always will suck.
Yeah, man. So, right after Steve McPherson wrote this article on 1500 ESPN, which is, it's time for Timberwolves to be zen, right? The day after I had him on my podcast and just, you know, bulleted through all these reasons why, no, the Timberwolves are going to be great, and then, you know, they lose to the Nets and all of this stuff. But, you know, I mean, another thing is, this is a generational center, or at least it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Right?
Karl Anthony Towns is supposed to be a generational center. Every general manager in the league said that they wanted him to build a franchise on. That's supposed to be something. I mean, when Shaq went to Orlando, it was pretty much instant.
We're 2 weeks in. I don't understand. Like, this is the thing I just don't understand. Like, we're 2 weeks in. They could be 10-8 at some point. They could correct it pretty quickly. I just think they need experience, and like Towns is allowing like 39% at the rim right now. Like that's pretty good defensively. Like really, the problem is that they're stuck playing Chris Dunn and Tyus Jones at point guard, which not very good defensively. Like Chris Dunn's a good defender for a rookie point guard, but not a good defender yet.
Right,
he's crazy inconsistent. Zach LaVine is an inconsistent defender. Wiggins has been really good. Gorgie's been pretty hit or miss, mostly miss. And Towns is good, but he's not Shaq. Like, and I don't know what to do with that. Like, this team, they play Shabazz Muhammad a lot of minutes. Cole Aldrich is a good backup center. Nemanja Bjelica is not a defender. Like, this team is just young, inexperienced, and they've had 7 games to figure out Tom Thibodeau's defense consistently, and they're getting picked apart, but they at least didn't get destroyed in the third quarter the last 2 games. Like, that's progress.
Yeah, they are making progress, I think. Granted, let's go burn Ted Bonchep's house down.
Well, I don't know about that, but, we definitely, like, he's got to start doling out those steak dinners that he bet everybody to for the Timberwolves winning 50 games. But this team will probably still win 40 games this year. Like, I feel pretty confident in that. I think they'll win 40 games, and like if they win 40 games, 29-40 wins, great. And then the year after, if they don't win 50, all right, now let's get Tom Thibodeau to admit he was wrong and he's fired and all this stuff. But until that, like, I give it 2 years.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the fair and reasonable thing to do. I just, I felt like the evidence was overwhelming. But, you know, you touched on and actually said the problem is, and then talked a little bit about the rookie Rubio thing where he's out with the elbow thing, which is, no one knows how long he's going to be out. I know that at the end of this road trip, they're examining it and maybe he's going to come back after that. But, I think one of the major lessons, which is intuitive but was nice to be explicitly spelled out after the process, was Sam Hinkie taught us all, if you want to lose a bunch of games, just don't have a point guard. Or even better yet, like start a rookie point guard, like TJ McConnell, right?
Yeah.
And the Wolves are a team that needs to have their team ran by a different guard than Zach LaVine, because, you know, Zach LaVine has historically not been super hot at being point guard. So I don't know. I think that it's sort of like the Rockets last year, where they had this gigantic drop off because they were just constantly turning over the ball, because they, you know, the people who were trying to distribute and stuff were just not supposed to be distributors. So they kept turning over the ball. And then, I mean, the Brooklyn Nets dropped like 40 points on them in transition. So I think it actually starts on the offensive end, right? With their lack of a point guard. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're at their best when they're running more of the offense through Towns, and that's even with Rubio on the court. Like, I just think he should have the ball in his hands at all times, and then let Rubio make, you know, secondary decisions for a lot of that stuff, especially if they're not going to run a lot of pick and roll, which they haven't been doing yet. I think there's something like the third or fourth fewest percentage of pick and roll plays so far this season, according to Synergy. So, like, if they're not going to do that, all right, give the ball to Towns and let him kind of create for everybody. But also, like, yeah, rookie point guards, even if they're good, don't really win games, right? Like, think of how stupid good was Damian Lillard as a rookie? That team won 33 games, and he had Nick Batum, Wes Matthews, LaMarcus Aldridge on his team. Granted, he also had J.J. Hickson playing center, so that's not conducive to a winning strategy. But, like, Lillard was spectacular, and they won 33 games. Like, they just don't win a lot with rookie point guards, even if they're fun.
Especially, I think, if your team is used to having Ricky Rubio sort of captaining the ship, right? And so all of a sudden, Karl-Anthony Towns is learning a role that he's not used to, and there's not a ton of spacing, so the whole turnover thing is amplified because all of the passing lanes are a little bit more constricted. I mean, it makes some sense. My hope is that their execution down the... I mean, their third quarters have just been really bad, and their fourth quarters. So ending games, I think that it's probably because like the defense amplifies and turns up a little bit, and that little lack of separation and lack of execution just generally on offense is leading to all these turnovers and all these fumbles and all this stagnation because everyone's scared that the ball's just going to be picked off and they're going to get it jammed on them in transition. So
yeah, and also like I mean, the third quarters are the biggest problem to me. They've been a pretty good fourth quarter team. Their first three losses were by a total of 10 points. Like that's a and that's essentially a coin flip, right? So if you flip a coin three times, call tails, and it ends up heads three times in a row, are you going to be like, this coin's broken? You know, like, I mean, I yes. they should like, well, you know, they should be the Kings and they should beat the Nuggets and they should have won that Grizzlies game in Memphis to start the year. They should have won all those games, but they didn't, and they didn't because of like kind of just randomness. And I just don't freak out at randomness.
Yeah, well, I think that's the question, is whether it is randomness or not. I think at this point, you know, one of the teams we're going to talk to, we can actually transition into them. Can we agree that they need a point guard who can run the system? It would be great if that point guard can also shoot, which I don't think Ricky Rubio will ever be able to do, but that's okay. He's still a great player. Once he comes back, a lot of these problems will be fixed.
Yeah, is I agree with that. And also, like, we're talking about the defensive end of it. He's like Patrick Beverly and Mike Conley are probably the only point guards who are better at defense than Ricky Rubio. So,
well, and Patrick Beverly dropped off a little bit.
Right, exactly. I mean, I'd still take him defensively over Rubio, but still, like, Rubio is one of the best defensive point guards in the league, and he does a lot to disrupt things. Like, if once they get him back, they'll probably be better defensively.
Yeah, I would buy that. A little bit of concern about just the way that he's good at defense. It would almost be better to just have a big body in front of him. I guess that's why you're saying with Patrick Beverly. But what I was going to say is it randomness if you always lose down the stretch? Because, I mean, the next team we're going to talk about is the 76ers. Is that random that they just can never pull it out in fourth quarters?
No, they don't have talent. Like, I mean, they have Joel Embiid, and he's fun, right? And he's crazy good for as little experience as he has, and he's going to be a monster in this league as long as he's healthy, but he's kind of it right now. Like, Okafor's fine, but I don't know that you're going to give him the ball at the end of the game and say, go win us a game. They're missing Jared Bayless, who would be their, like, crunch time guard, lead guard. Sergio Rodriguez, there's probably a reason he wasn't in the NBA for a few years. You know, like, he's a competent point guard, but he's not that good. I don't know what the hell Nick Stauskas is, so I'm not going to try to explain him, but like they're going with like Robert Covington and Gerald Henderson and you know, occasionally Hollis Thompson and guys like this. Like, there's talent there, but there's not much talent there, and I don't know how much of it is ready to win.
I seem to recall you saying in your East over-unders that Joel Embiid adds 10 wins.
Yeah, so they're a 20-win team, right? They won 10 games last year. They could win 20 this year, and I think that's accurate. Like, he's good. Like, he's just flat-out good.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, he's got issues to cover up, but, I mean, he hasn't played competitive basketball in 3 years.
Like, yeah.
The last time he played competitive basketball was college, and college is garbage basketball. So, like, I don't know what to – you know, I don't know how much we're expecting him to impact the game right away, but he seems to be pretty good at it.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't make a trend out of disagreeing with Kevin Pelton. It's generally a bad idea. It generally means that you're wrong. But he was on, I think, The Ringer, and talking about – he compared Joel Embiid to a baby giraffe, just sort of not knowing what he's doing. And I think that that's not true. I think that Joel Embiid does really have a great fundamental understanding of the game, and he picks up things so fast that,
yeah.
I mean – there's been so much made about his relationship with Sam Hinkie and the fact that he was watching all of these games that he was sitting out and like learning and picking things up. I just don't think it's one of those things where he is stepping in after 2 years of cold turkey. As far as like a mindset thing, I don't think he's like mentally raw.
Yeah, I think he knows the game. I think he has a great understanding of the game. I think you have to learn the speed of the game, right? And that's the problem. And a lot of that helps of learning the speed of the game when you have talent around you. Like, the way he looks now next to, you know, Robert Covington playing the four is going to look a lot different than when he plays in 2 months with Ben Simmons running the four, right? And being a great passer. Like, Ben Simmons is going to get him so many easy buckets because of his passing ability that that's going to up the efficiency and that's going to up his understanding of where to be on the court. Like, I just think once you start putting talent around Joel Embiid, my God, I mean, he's going to be Godzilla. Like, he's just going to be too good.
Yeah, no, I did this whole breakdown of him and Shaq having pretty similar numbers, but if Shaq hit 82% from the free throw line, he would have had, I think it was 4,000 more points over the course of his career than he would have.
That's a lot. That's a lot of points, right?
Yeah, and I mean, the high side of Joel Embiid is Shaq, but I think there's a lot of similarities. I think the physical dominance is there. There was always a lot made about Shaq, at least early in his career, being like a point guard, you know, and if he just hits all of his free throws, that also opens him up so much on offense because you can't just hack him, you know?
Right. Yeah, you have to play him straight up. You can't just bail him out, or you can't bail out your defense by sending him to the free throw line because he can hit those.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, we've been seeing one of the things he does is pump fake. It's, man, he's so good. But yeah, I agree. And that was a great point that if you're 10 wins better, that's just 20 wins. But you do think that a lot of this will be fixed by having Ben Simmons. I mean, Ben Simmons looked like he could run an NBA offense in Summer League, but Summer League is Summer League.
Yeah, Summer League's garbage too, right? But at the same time, like I got a chance to watch him really up close in Utah, and then I watched him, you know, from a bit farther away in terms of, like, you know, angle of the media seat in Las Vegas. But there's just few guys I've ever seen pass the ball like that at any level.
Yeah, it's
so
amazing.
Yeah, like, so you can say, like, oh, just Summer League, but these passing angles are beyond, like, level of play. And so, like, LeBron is one of the greatest passers I've ever seen live. Rubio is just a phenomenal passer. Chris Paul, like, all the guys we know, but, like, I really think Ben Simmons is just like one notch below their passing ability, their vision, the way they kind of set plays up. And you're like, yeah, he's going to have to learn how to shoot a jumper. He's going to have to learn how to finish at the rim when he's not dunking, and he's going to have to hit free throws. He's going to have to learn all that stuff and get better at it. But passing wise, like, he's just, if you give him Joel Embiid and you give him three guys who can shoot marginally well from the outside, like, that's a killer combination in the future.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I agree with you. I think actually watching Summer League, the amount of turnovers that he had, I mean, and this is speculative, like, it's based on my judgment, he had one turnover that I thought was his fault off of a pass, and then all of the other ones were just his teammates screwing up. And I think that that's a skill, and I'm always watching for stuff in Summer League that is something that you can translate, and it's hard because it's garbage. I think, if anything, making passes like that for Simmons, you aren't going to have such trash teammates, and they'll actually catch the ball and maybe shoot it and maybe make it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of instances where, like, Rashawn Holmes, who I do think is an NBA player, like, just wasn't ready for the ball. And
right.
At a certain point, guys don't want the ball to slip through their hands, and they don't want to get hit in the face with a pass, so they just become ready.
Yeah, yeah. I bet that there was a lot of pegging of Amare Stoudemire in the face in the early on Suns. Absolutely. So, okay.
And Chris Webber and Vlade Divac got hit in the face with you know, from Jason Williams passes. Kevin Love and Darko Milicic got hit in the face. Well, Darko just sucks, but, like, those guys got hit in the face with passes from Ricky Rubio early on. Like, that's just, it just happens.
I think Jason Williams isn't capable of doing a straight up pass. I think he can only pass behind the back.
Or if he is going to make a chest pass, I think it's in the CBA that he has to look away as he makes the pass.
Oh, man, that Sacramento team, that was a lot of fun. But, okay, so fixing the 76ers, what's your opinion on the whole Nerlens Noel ticking clock? Because I think that we've all reached a consensus that it's him who has to leave. But, I mean, is playing chicken with Danny Ainge a good idea?
I mean, I don't know. I guess it depends on how good you think Danny Ainge is at drafting, right? So, like, are draft picks more valuable in his hands or more valuable in another GM's hands? Like, I'd personally take another GM. I think Danny Ainge is a pretty mediocre drafter. But he's fairly good in trades. Like, he's fairly good at, like, also, I don't know. Some of this is skewed by Billy King just not realizing you could put pick protections on draft picks and people above him saying, get this deal done. So if you take away that Brooklyn deal, which maybe isn't a fair way to assess Danny Ainge, like how great does this rebuild look? I don't know. Not very good to me. Not bad, but like I think it's fine. You know,
the Jay Crowder thing worked out.
Yeah, the Jay Crowder thing worked out. You know, he also drafted Fab Melo, who was out in 6 months.
Oof.
Like, you know, I mean, he's had some really bad draft picks. He's had some good trades, but he's had some pretty mediocre things as well. But I guess that's going to happen when you're doing it as long as he's doing it. But I don't know, like in terms of Nerlens Noel, are we sure he's good?
Yeah.
But why? Because he gets steals and blocks? Like that's guessing right two times a game.
Well, I mean, when he was on the court with Jahlil, they had an above average defense, you know, like, and plus, like, as a rookie, especially doing the stuff that he was able to do, and he could protect the rim and also, like, switch. I think an uninjured Nerlens Noel is potentially a perennial Defensive Player of the Year candidate.
I mean, I don't know that I agree. I don't think he's bad defensively. I don't see this, like, oh, he's already a really good defender. He makes a ton of mistakes. And maybe part of that is he's just played with horrible teammates. And it's hard.
I think that might be.
But I also think like he's got one of the best coaching staffs in the league for developing guys. So where do you draw the line of like this is his teammates' fault, this is his fault for not getting what they're learning? Because they were like his rookie year, they were really good with him on the court defensively. And then there was a huge drop off the next year. Is that just because the team got worse, or is that because teams maybe figured out how to play against him? I don't really have an answer for that. I just don't think if you acquire Nerlens Noel, and there are also a lot of questions about his off court, you know, personality and his maturity and stuff like that. And maybe that gets fixed with a new situation, but I don't think like acquiring Nerlens Noel is an instant win for your team.
Yeah. If you were Danny Ainge, what would you be willing to part with?
I mean, not much. Like, I don't know how good Brooklyn's going to end up being, you know, over the long haul this season. But if that pick looks like it's going to fall outside the top six or seven, which is a big if, I'd probably move that pick.
Yeah, I've thought about maybe the 76ers just because, like you were saying, their development coaching is good. Who's that? The Celtics have this small forward, James Young. Do you think the 76ers... man, I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, James Young...
Terry Rozier, maybe?
They were trying to decide, like, should they keep James Young or R.J. Hunter as they made their, like, final cuts for the roster. I don't know what that says about James Young, because R.J. Hunter's not very good, right?
it says that he's garbage.
Yeah, like, I mean, and there are just some questions that... And I was dead wrong about him. I thought he was going to be really good coming out of Kentucky, and he, so far, is, like, not even a good D-League player. Or not a system D-League player. So I don't know if that's just, like, we missed on him or... You know, circumstances have kept him from kind of developing so far, whatever that is. But I also think like the Celtics are pretty good at developing players. So, I don't know that he has a future in this league. Like I would want more than James Young. As down as I am on Nerlens Noel, I would want more than James Young for him. But I'd also like if I'm the Sixers, I'd move Noel and I'd move Okafor. I'd just move them both and say, we're going to trust that we can keep Joel healthy. And by the way, we have Ben Simmons to play the four and we have Dario Saric to back him up and, you know, try to run with us.
Well, so why would you move Jahlil? I think he works in a bench role and he seems to be warming up to everyone. And if you're going to give someone, I mean, I get that his contract in a couple of years is someone's going to throw a ton of money at him. Maybe. I mean, after the cap spike, not a lot of teams are going to be able to throw that much money at him. I mean, that's what the 76ers would hope anyways. But, I mean, I think he's a better safeguard as far as if Joel Embiid doesn't work out than I think people realize. I think that he and Ben Simmons would synergize well in the way that I see them playing.
Yeah, but then, like, who's playing defense for you? Like, and how long is he going to accept being a bench player? Probably not his whole career.
Yeah.
So are you just having him as insurance for Embiid? Okay, that's fair, but at some point you have to make a decision there. So I would go now while his trade value is likely to be higher than if he's just in a bench role all the time. But that's me just kind of trying to guess the trade market as well. I don't think you can play Embiid and Okafor together. So at some point, like how badly do you need a post scorer? And how, like, even the best post scorers in today's game aren't very efficient. Right, like you get
unless you're Enes Kanter.
Right, unless you're Enes Kanter, but then you know you're probably giving that away and on the other end and then some. But like, you know, the best post scorers right now are somewhere between 90 to maybe 98 points per 100 possessions on post possessions. Like, that's not a good offense. You know, you can work with it and you can make it work in certain situations, but you don't want a heavy post up offense.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we can't have the conversation about the way that Jahlil Okafor's game rounds into form, especially defensively. But so fixing the 76ers, I mean, there's not really a way to do it, but <Yeah. laughs> a good start is moving Nerlens. And I think that Covington needs to go somewhere else because I think he's falling victim to the same thing that Marvin Williams did for the majority of his career. And then last year, Luol Deng did, where just playing slightly out of position, when Luol Deng was playing the power forward and instead of at the small forward when Chris Bosh went down, his stats made this huge jump. And Marvin Williams was hardly even an effective player for the Hawks when he was at the three. But in Charlotte, he's playing the four, and he's had this renaissance. So I think that's what's going to happen with Robert Covington. I think he's really, really good at the four, and he's just being held back, and he's just adequate at the three.
Yeah, and I mean, he's not – like, he's a shooter who can't shoot right now, right? Like, he's shooting, like, I don't know, 30% from the three-point line. I think 30% from the field, too. Like, he's been pretty, you know, bad at making shots. But I agree. Like, I think – for him to thrive, he needs to get more time at the four and he needs to be able to get out and run. And the Marvin Williams comparison's pretty good. Like, Marvin Williams has become an excellent stretch four. And can Robert Covington become Marvin Williams? No, but if he becomes 75% of Marvin Williams, that's still a pretty good player.
Well, I don't see why he couldn't be Marvin Williams. Maybe he can't be the Marvin Williams who last night shot 5 for 7 from three. Or maybe it wasn't last night, but so I think we agree on that point. That's something that's bothered me for a really long time. I would like him to end up on the Rockets somehow, but I just don't see how it happens. I think the 76ers, it's like, you fix this by just turning off your TV and then putting it in your attic and taking it out in 2 years when they're actually good.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. And like, you know, whatever gets you Markel Fultz in this year's draft, whatever the Sixers need to do that, that's what you need to do.
Yeah, yeah. No, Markel Fultz is,
man. He's gonna be crazy good in a league full of good point guards. Like, he's ridiculous.
I think he's solidifying himself as the number one pick. I think the narrative right now is that it's sort of a toss-up and there are all these guards who are just bunched at the top. And I don't see why he wouldn't become sort of the consensus number one by a decent margin.
Yeah, and even if, like, I doubt he'll have to go into pre-draft workouts, but even if he goes into pre-draft workouts against other point guards, like, he's just going to destroy everyone. And that's in a class of pretty good point guards coming in, like, or at least, yeah, point guard prospects. Like, he's just going to be better than everybody.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, so moving on to, speaking of point guards who would get destroyed, Orlando Magic. I can't stand Elfrid Payton.
I said this on the True Hoop podcast last week of, like, if he didn't have interesting hair, would we care about him as a prospect?
I remember that now.
I really don't think we would, and I'm not trying to, like, crap all over Elfrid Payton. I just don't think he's very good.
Yeah, no, I have nothing against him personally. I'm sure he's a great guy, but, I mean, I've talked to Magic people and just said, I haven't gotten a good response as to why this team isn't so much better starting Oladipo at the point instead of him.
Yeah, I mean, I know they tried to throw Oladipo early on, mostly before Elfrid, but, like, they were so bad together last year that they had to break them up in terms of staggering the minutes because you just couldn't play the two of them together. Part of that's, you know, Oladipo being an inconsistent shooter, but it's also just, like, you don't have to play Elfrid Payton, and even if he draws a bunch of fouls, like, he's not a good free throw shooter. He's shooting a career high 68% or 65% or whatever it is this year. Like, prior to this year, he was a below 60% free throw shooter. So what is he doing for you offensive? Like, anyone can kind of just pass and get assists. Like, you know, six to seven a game is good. It's not bad. Not everyone can do it, but it's not that far from it. And defensively, like, he's okay. I don't think he's a bad defender, but he's not, like, changing your defense. So I just don't understand what he does for you.
Okay, so this is ridiculous, but what about Hezonja starting at point guard?
Man, I'm for as much Mario Hezonja as possible. I don't know, even if it's not a good idea, I'm in because I just want him on the court.
I just think that he's the type of player who creates offense even when the spacing is garbage.
Yeah.
And there's no reason for him not to be a good defender. And he has upside, and Elfrid Payton I don't think does. I mean, the fix for the Magic is just, like, figuring out lineups that are actually going to work. And unfortunately, I just feel like this... I feel like it's an underreported or under-scrutinized thing where I think this Magic locker room might be really volatile. You know, their ups and downs last year under Skiles, and then Skiles, you know, bounced and just said peace and quit. And Vucevic, you know, won't take a bench role. And I think that a lot of the adjustments for the Magic could easily be made, and Vogel probably knows what they are. He's just too delicate to make them because it would just all explode.
Yeah, and
I don't know. Like, that's my theory.
There's some politics within the team in terms of, like, you know, who's making the decisions between Rob Hennigan and Alex Martins, and there, you know, there's some stuff that they have to kind of sort out at the top before it trickles down to the bench and, you know, the locker room and all that stuff. Yeah, like, if you're going to go with the style of Frank Vogel, why do you have Vucevic on the team?
Yeah.
You know, like, that doesn't make any sense to me. And I look at Hezonja as, like, one of those kids at the mall who's on a leash, where you're just confused. Look, it's possible Hezonja is going to run over to Santa Claus in the mall and kick him in the shin, right? It's also possible he goes to Build-A-Bear and makes the greatest Build-A-Bear we've ever seen. Like, I think there's a wide range, and you just have to take that kid off the leash and just see what happens. And they're trying to mold him into, like, you know, play within the system, all this stuff. And I just don't think that's the way you maximize his abilities. And this Orlando team's not going to win, right? Like, they're not going to make the playoffs. So go develop those guys. Like, let Aaron Gordon go be Aaron Gordon. He's crazy good. Like, go let Serge Ibaka be a good defender. Like, go let Hezonja make some plays and kind of earn that cockiness on an NBA court. Like, if you're going to have these prospects, like, at least use them properly.
Yeah, and I mean, the Magic strike me as a team who could really use some players who, just in one-on-one situations, off of switches or just off the dribble, can create offense out of nothing. I mean, if Kyrie Irving was on the Magic, they'd be a lot better. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? Like, I know we hate Hero Ball, and it's like, hey, we got to move the ball and take good shots. I don't know, man. Hero Ball is pretty fun. Like, yeah. I really enjoy watching Jamal Crawford. I really enjoyed watching Kobe Bryant. I enjoy guys who could just, like, all right, 8 seconds left on the clock, I'm going to break you down and get off a shot. And, so, you know, sometimes it's bad, but sometimes it really is effective. I mean, it just won a championship, so.
Yeah, exactly. No. I agree with you 100%. And Mario Hezonja is the closest thing to an answer they have as far as that. And then you also are solving something. If you're starting Mario Hezonja, then you're moving Aaron Gordon to the four. It's a fun idea to play him at the three defensively, and in some weird ways it works better. But I just think, you know, you're shooting yourself in the foot if you're playing him at the three offensively. He's not Paul George, you know?
Right. Yeah, and he's not going to be Paul George, but he doesn't have to be in order to be a really good player in this league, right? Like, we kind of get stuck, and Frank Vogel did this by making comments about it, but we kind of get stuck of, like, oh, well, who has Frank Vogel had in the past? Okay, maybe this guy can fit into that role. Or you just create new roles and new responsibilities for the existing talent you have. Like, right. He doesn't all have to fit piece by piece, which is, I mean, you can't compare everybody to Greg Popovich, but Greg Popovich just adapts to whatever his talent is, right?
Exactly.
Tries to figure that out. Like, not a lot of coaches do that, and that's why you see so much turnover with a lot of coaches.
Well, yeah, and I think what Vogel has structured his defenses around is, you know, having a guy who just plays free safety and digs and, you know, tends to help a lot more than other players and is really good at that.
Yeah.
But also shuts down their man sort of at the same time, and that's what Paul George has always been. And there's no reason why a power forward can't do that. I mean, that's what Kevin Garnett did for years on the Celtics.
Right, and like Aaron Gordon can learn to do all that, right? I mean, he's already a pretty good defender. I think he can guard threes. I'd rather he guard fours and kind of be able to roam a little bit. But you also, like, when you have a roster that has Jeff Green and Bismack Biyombo and Nick Vucevic and Serge Ibaka getting minutes, where do you put him?
Yeah.
You know, where do you put Aaron Gordon? And I mean, my God, like, Jeff Green's playing 20 minutes a game. I think DJ Augustine's playing 20 minutes a game. Like, neither of those guys should be playing.
So here are my fixes for the Magic. I think that there are lineups that could work. They have the talent to make something work. They just need to capitalize on it. What I would like to see is sort of do what Dwayne Casey has done over the last couple of years with the Raptors, where he just tries to hold the fort during the starters' minutes on the court and then try to blow things up with the bench units, you know? I think that just, like, put all your defensive players, play Biombo, Ibaka, Gordon, you know, Evan Fournier, so it's not just a total disaster. And if you have to play Elfrid Payton, then I guess play him then. And then, you know, just try to hold the fort down, try to keep it so that those minutes are, maybe you can lose them so they're up by 5 points because it's such a low scoring, there's so many low scoring possessions. And then on the bench unit, try to use Mario and Vucevic and Jeff Green to just try to really blow them out of the water in terms of scoring just during those limited minutes. Do you get what I mean? I think that's their best bet.
Yeah, for sure. I'd just say blow it up. Get rid of Vucevic, get rid of Ibaka, get rid of Payton. The only guys I would keep on this roster right now are Gordon, Fournier, because you just gave him the money and you do need a shooter. Biombo, because you gave him the money, and I think you could anchor a defense around Biombo and Gordon as the 4-5. I don't know what it does offensively, but yeah, they're kind of in the spirit of what you're saying. And then I would keep Azonia because I'd let the kid off the leash, let him roam the mall and see what he does.
Well, I mean, I think that Biombo, if their point guard wasn't Elfrid Payton and he was instead Chris Paul, Biombo would be so good. I mean, he would basically be DeAndre, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, even if he wasn't, even if you don't throw Chris Paul in there, like if you throw like Rubio or Kemba Walker or like even like one of those like 12 to 15, 16 ranked point guards, you throw one of those guys in there, you can just better utilize everybody.
So what say you on Brandon Knight and Alex Len for Elfrid Payton and Vucevic?
Well, I still think you have problems like with the whole Biombo Len combination because I think you're still cluttered. I don't know what I thought. Like, I was a believer in Brandon Knight when he left Milwaukee. I thought it was a solid move because Phoenix was giving up a draft pick, but they were getting a guy who can score and can score on the perimeter. But after seeing Brandon Knight in Phoenix, like I don't know.
Yeah.
I still want to believe in him, but you got to see that same impact that he had in Milwaukee, and we just haven't seen it yet.
Well, I think the systems are a lot closer. I mean, there were so many possessions that Brandon Knight had in Milwaukee where he just had to put something up, you know? I think Brandon Knight is a little bit like Kyrie, you know? He could have that same type of effect where the Suns were just trying to do so many different things, and their offense was pulled in so many different directions that his offensive effect was minimalized, and then he's trash at defense. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, he's good at just, like, pounding the rock and then putting up a shot that goes in 40% of the time, but that's better than what they're doing right now, you know?
Yeah, and you also might alleviate a lot of his issues by not playing him with Eric Bledsoe and giving him a shooter like Evan Fournier to play alongside. Like, I'm not very big on Eric Bledsoe and the combination. While I had hope for it, just doesn't seem to work.
Yeah. So what about on the Suns' end? Would you do that? You get paid in Vucevic?
I don't know that I want Vuce and Tyson Chandler for that much money. I guess Payton is good insurance for Eric Bledsoe and his injury issues that seem to crop up now that I don't think he has any cartilage in one of his knees anymore.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, do I like the combination of Payton and Devin Booker? Not really. I like Devin Booker, but I don't want to saddle him with Elfrid Payton.
Yeah. I sort of like it just because I think the Suns should just go for broke offensively, and the Bledsoe-Vucevic pick and roll has a lot of potential, and they're going to be trash at defense regardless of what happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you may as well carve out an identity on both sides.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's my thought process, and I don't know, and he would start, and Tyson Chandler, and Alex Len is so bad. Like, why is he... He's so bad.
Yeah, I mean, he's not good, but he's... I don't know, he's shown some flashes, granted, in a lot of, like, games that teams don't have to worry about, right? And that's kind of always the tricky part with these young guys who all of a sudden put up big numbers is like, are you doing that because you're good, or are you doing that because the other team is not worried about beating you?
And
often it's probably the latter. But I know he can rebound. He can rebound. He can score around the basket. If he can just protect the rim,
he shot so bad around the basket, though.
Yeah. But I think like it's kind of an Andre Drummond type situation where he can just go get the miss, right? Like I think he has that kind of bulk and that kind of power. And if you can develop him into, 75-80% of what Jonas Valanciunas is, like that's pretty valuable.
Yeah. And it would also be good for a Magic team that misses a lot of shots. So you said you had about an hour. How about we do the last team, and are you cool to come back on?
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Because there's still a lot of messes that we need to clean up. So, we're going to have to go to Walgreens and buy some Fabuloso and stuff.
Absolutely.
Man, I really hit a brick wall there, but moving along. Okay, the Knicks.
Blow it up. There is no fix.
What does that mean?
Derrick Rose sucks. Like, so don't re-sign him.
I have written down or typed in jettison Derrick Rose into space.
Yeah, I would do that. Like, he's not good. Even when he scores efficiently, it takes away from the offense. So get rid of him. Hope that there's an amnesty clause for Joakim Noah once the new CBA gets finalized. Because I think he's good, but I just don't think his body will let him be good anymore. And that's really the problem. And, we're not that far. It was like 2.5 years ago that he was the defensive player of the year, and his body just died. Like he can't move. And if you're not really running the triangle, which they don't seem to be doing all that much, like they run a little bit, but if you're not running the triangle, I just don't get what you're doing with him on offense. Because you want him setting screens and passing the ball. And that's not happening a whole lot. And I'm still like a Melo defender. Like I think Melo serves a huge purpose. He draws so much attention from the defense that I think that you can take advantage of that with someone like Kristaps Porzingis. So I don't think you need to like, hey, Melo's got to go, and that's the only way. But Kristaps needs to be your number two, and surround everybody else with shooters and guys who can play some defense.
Yeah, one of the fixes is Porzingis at the five, Melo at the four. I just feel like playing that a little bit could be so devastating.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I don't know how much you want to do that in any given game because it's not even a strength issue with Kristaps playing the five. It's more just even in today's pace and space and all that stuff, like centers just take a lot of abuse. And so do you want to put Kristaps through that 25 to 30 minutes a game? I don't know. Like that, I kind of worry that then you're in an Anthony Davis situation where Anthony Davis is missing 20 games a year, right? And you don't want Kristaps to fall into that. And maybe that's an unfair thing to assume that that would happen. But like 15 to 20 minutes a game of Kristaps at the five, yeah, sign me up. Like he's going to devastate.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, if you're the Knicks, you're dead set on making the playoffs. And
good luck with that.
If you have Carmelo, you should try to do that. I don't know. I mean, the number one thing, did you read Courtney Lee's comments about practice and running the triangle?
Yeah. No one's on the same page. That's the other thing. Is that no one seems to know what their goal is.
Yeah. They're another one of those teams who are just being pulled in so many different directions. And, like, I mean, I feel like the triangle needs to go. That's the crucial element here, is that you can start to form some sort of identity that makes a little bit of sense when you're not. I mean, that's so alarming. Like, that Courtney Lee comment was so alarming. Like, no wonder their defense is, like, the second worst in the league. Like, they don't know how to defend actual offenses, you know?
Yeah, and they'll probably be in a problem. I mean, God, they just handed over the defense to Kurt Rambis, so good luck with that. But the problem is that the ideal way for them to play on offense is push the ball, run pick and roll stuff early, and then if you can't get anything out of those mismatches that you can create through that, by kind of pushing everything and getting, bad switches and bad matchups, if you can't take advantage of that by like 10 on the shot clock, then go into the triangle. Because I actually think the triangle is a great offense for trying to create a quality look at the end of a shot clock. If, like, if you can run it for 6 to 10 seconds there and run it efficiently, you can get good shots. So I think, like, pick and roll, or like push the ball, pick and roll, see what you get, and then if it breaks down, run a quick triangle set and get a good shot out of it. But you also, to be able to do that, you have to get stops.
Yeah.
And so until they fix the defense, like, it probably doesn't matter what they're going to do offensively.
The Spurs did a lot of what you just described, sort of, you know, once a play breaks down or it doesn't look like LaMarcus was going to be happy with the shot that he could create by backing people down, they, in the last few seconds, you know, would sort of just try to get some rapid ball movement. And then if everything broke down, Kawhi, I mean, at least a lot this year is just taking shots. I mean, that's part of the reason why I think that, you know, if you can get out on breaks and you can stop having so many turnovers, and I'm okay with, you know, maybe Brandon Jennings and Carmelo doing the whole Kyrie and LeBron taking turns thing. I'm okay with that, yeah. Maybe. Partially because they're playing two bigs and your power forward is Kristaps, right?
Right.
Like, so.
Yeah, I mean, you can space with Kristaps. He can crash the boards and, you know, unleash hell above the rim. Like, you can do a lot of stuff by playing two bigs, because it's, well, you're playing a 7'3" guy. It's not like you're playing two bigs, if that makes sense. You know, but yeah. but none of the stuff works. And that's another thing too with, like, pushing the pace, is if you can do it without turning the ball over, that's ideal. Obviously, that's a great bit of analysis, but it's not about just, like, getting fast break points and getting quick threes. It's about creating mismatches. That's why teams push the pace so much, is because you have a defense scrambling to get back and just find someone to defend. And then, so then you exploit those mismatches. And if you can create those mismatches with Carmelo,
right?
Like, he's just a bully. Right? Like, he's still just slamming into guys, and guys are bouncing off of him because he's so strong. And so if you can get that for an offense centered around Carmelo, like, that's where it becomes advantageous.
Right. Yeah, no, exactly. I really like Carmelo too. I think about like Carmelo on other teams a lot. I think about him a lot on the Celtics, because he's around that age that the first big three iteration was, you know, like, he's not like prime, but he's still such a great player. And I mean, he might be a top five, at least a top 10 scorer. But you're right. I mean, I think that, you know, the much hyped Olympic Melo is Olympic Melo because when you're playing him at the four, you know, or even at the three, really, like, you had an inherent mismatch just because he was just going to bully and destroy anyone who he was paired up with defensively. And that's lost a lot of the time if you're running this weird clunky. I mean, the triangle is not the greatest thing for creating mismatches. Like, it would be great if they ran more like pick and roll type action, but I don't even know if they could do that effectively with Joakim. I mean,
you certainly can't do it with Derrick Rose in 2016.
Derrick Rose is floating in space right now. So,
well, that's true. Yeah, we launched him into space. And you know, another thing with Carmelo is our perception of him is colored even 13 years later by who he was drafted with. Right? It's like, if he came out straight out of high school in 2002, okay, he beats out Yao Ming as the number one pick. We would feel differently about him. If he stays 2 years at Syracuse and comes out in 2004, all right, now he's battling with Dwight Howard as a prospect, but we feel different about him. It's because he came out with LeBron James, and we thought we were going to have this Magic Bird rivalry, you know, 2.0 with the two of them. And LeBron became so historically great that we're looking at LeBron and we're like, well, why doesn't Carmelo do this stuff? Like, that's what it is that we've paired him with LeBron because they came out in the same class and they were battling for Rookie of the Year and all this stuff. But because he's not the passer LeBron is, and because he's not the defender LeBron is,
and because Darko Milicic went with the second pick,
and like he's in Dwayne Wade and he's in there with Chris Bosh and all this stuff, we're like, well, why? Well, Carmelo should be this guy, and it's like, I don't know, man. Carmelo as he is pretty good. Like, yeah, he's got flaws. Don't get me wrong. He's got things that you would definitely like him to improve upon, or even put, you know, 50% more effort into. But he's still really good.
So back in 2003, you know, have you ever toyed around like in 2005 and 2006 with Pistons minus Darko plus Carmelo. Is that something I've done?
I think that would be awesome. I think I would love to have seen that kind of sliding doors universe.
I think Melo would have won a championship before LeBron.
Oh, for sure. But I also wonder, like, if they have that, do they make the Rasheed Wallace deal? I'm not convinced they do. I'm not convinced that is an option for them in the middle of, 2004 or whenever they did it. So I will always go with adding Rasheed Wallace over adding just about anybody in NBA history because I love Rasheed Wallace.
Yeah, I too have a need for Rasheed. I mean, the Knicks are talented, right?
I don't know. Their bench is pretty apocalyptic. Like,
yeah, that's another reason why I think it's unfixable. Is like, I had this moment where I realized that I had been saying I think the Knicks are going to be better than people think. That's something I said in the off season, and then I realized that it's just because the people who I follow and listen to are smart, and they said the Knicks are going to be garbage. And then I realized that, oh, wait, the collective consensus is that the Knicks are actually going to be good. And so, like, then I realized that my 30-win optimism was, like, not sort of optimism. And part of that was based on the idea that these European guys, I mean,
who's their best? Who's their best bench player? Is it either Lance Thomas Brandon Jennings, right?
Or isn't there? There's that one wing, right? Isn't it?
Justin Holliday.
Right. Yeah. It might be.
Yeah,
Justin
so
Holliday.
Like, what are we talking about here? Right. Like those are decent role players. I like Lance Thomas a lot. He's really improved. I still will always have a place in my heart for Brandon Jennings because I love the way he played in high school. Justin Holliday, I'm coming around on. He's pretty solid, but like, if that's your best bench player,
I mean,
you don't have a good bench.
I mean, the real problem is there's no coming back from defensively, anyways. If Joakim Noah in this form of Joakim Noah is going to be your starting center, and you're going to replace him with like Willie Hernan Gomez and other flotsam, you're never going to have a even sort of adequate NBA center, and that's really bad, especially when you have guys like Carmelo is astoundingly lazy on defense, and that's okay. Yeah. You know, I mean, that could work on a different team that had a good center. He could be lazy if he played with Rudy Gobert, but just people just waltz into the paint, and I mean, they could make moves. There's some stuff that they could do to improve, but not in a significant way. Do they have their draft pick next year?
That's a good question. I have that somewhere. I kind of feel like they do.
Let's see. They picked Kristaps. I think they don't, because they picked Kristaps last year.
2017 Knicks. The Knicks do have their draft pick in 2017.
Okay. So the closest thing to a good idea is just to die and fall on your sword and jettison Derrick Rose into space.
Yeah, but that actually might make their team better if they jettison Derrick Rose into space.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe you should just like run the offense through him and let him go to work, so to speak. I mean, here's the problem is that they will be good enough to probably play themselves out of a very good draft pick, right? And that's what they need. Like, they need – I mean, I don't know. The 2017 draft class, at least right now, looks to be really good. So if they can end up with a top 10 pick, maybe that's enough to do it. And, you know, to Phil's credit, like, drafting Kristaps was a home run. But you need another home run here. And if they end up tying themselves to Derrick Rose after this summer – that's bad.
That would be,
and they might have to, right? Like, they might, I mean, not have to, but they might decide that that's the only course of action, because there is still very much a sense in that organization, and a lot of organizations, to be fair, of winning a press conference. And how do you win a press conference if you let how do you win the press conference of trading for Derrick Rose if you just let him walk the next summer?
because Brandon Jennings is averaging 25 points a game. Hopefully.
Yeah, but on 28 shots. So what are you doing there?
Okay, so last question of this podcast, and then we'll regroup and come back for the last few teams. So would this team be better or worse if Kurt Rambis was playing point guard and Derrick Rose was coaching defense?
I mean, I think at least Rambis knows he has to get rid of the ball. In kind of celebrating the old school post of Tom Ziller of, you know, who could run the Timberwolves better, David Kahn or an avocado. And I think the avocado ended up winning in this experiment of having anyone run your defense as opposed to Kurt Rambis. Well, and, yeah, that's probably a win.
And hey, if Derrick Rose is coaching your – oh, wait. Never mind. I was thinking, like, at least Derrick Rose couldn't coach the triangle, but –
I'm not even sure Derrick Rose can draw a triangle, so.
Oh,
there's a reason. There's a reason the Bulls didn't really let him talk to reporters all that much.
Yeah, I mean, he just, the level of complexity that Joakim Noah had to go through to make the Bulls sort of work. Oh God, the Bulls would have won a championship if Derrick Rose was smarter than a fifth grader. But, you know, I feel dirty calling NBA players stupid, but he's kind of...
I don't know that he's necessarily stupid. I just think that... I just think that he doesn't know how to answer questions without getting in his own way.
Yeah. I think part of that is the people around him are nuts and sort of, you know, his brothers are like, you're still the best player in the world, so he doesn't have a ton of touch on reality, and this is the worst possible way to end a podcast, so that's why I'm going to end it here. Zach, I really appreciate you coming on.
I appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
Yeah, no, this was a great conversation. I'm looking forward to, let's see, the teams, just so if there's a couple of people still listening, even after that whole talking about Melo depressing segment, the teams that we still have to go through are the Warriors, mostly the center position, Celtics, Pelicans, Wizards, and Mavs. So
the last couple just sound like a delight to go through.
I mean, God, I'm from Dallas. It hurts. I feel bad.
I watched them, I guess last week, when they lost to the Jazz, and that was sad. That was depressing. And I don't even have skin in that fight, but that was not fun to watch as a basketball nerd.
It's really bad. And I, oh God. Okay. All right. This is the worst way to end a podcast, and we're going to do it anyways.
Well, to cheer people up, go YouTube like puppy videos.
Yeah.
There's a video of like a 12-week-old French bulldog puppy that learned how to ring a bell. So go YouTube that. That'll cheer you
and
up.
And don't use Yahoo, because if you see Yahoo News, you'll...
Yeah, you'll just throw your computer out the window.
Oh, man. Okay, well, so are you at Talk Hoops, I think, right?
At Talk Hoops, and we have a really good team of writers at wolfamongwolves.com, so go check that out.
Yeah, no, they really do. It's going to be great. It's going to be a golden age in internet blogging once the Wolves take over the world.
And that's, you know, 2 years away.
Yeah. I'm still holding out for them to get better this year. I said 50 wins in August, so.
50's a lot.
Yeah. I have a beautiful mind-style chart over here off to the side, you know, of my studio where I have all the pins and stuff put together, but...
maybe this is me just being a crotchety 34-year-old, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way towards the Timberwolves. I just think young people are dumb, and so like getting young people to grasp, you know, complex disciplined defensive schemes at a you know, instantly, that's hard to do. And as smart as I think Cat is, and as smart as I think Wiggins is, it's hard. NBA teams are tricky.
Yeah, and that's why the two of us have to fix things, you know?
Exactly.
All right, tune in next time. Thanks for listening, guys. Thanks for coming on, Zach. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, anytime. Thank you.